Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have with us Ray Geary. Ray is the CEO of iDonate, a technology company that helps provide solutions to nonprofits to help them do more good in the world. And he has a background of 30 years in working in technology. And early in his career, he was a VC. We're looking forward to today's conversation with Ray. First off, can you give us just a little bit of your history, a little bit of your career story? We'd love to hear it.
Sure. I think the easiest way to describe it is in three pieces. When I graduated from school, I went to the University of Oklahoma. When I graduated with a business degree, we had a family business. My father was an entrepreneur. He started a petroleum distribution business in Texas, and he wanted me to come back and work with him. So I had the opportunity to come back into the family business, a very entrepreneurial small company, although we operated across two or three states, and just learned a lot about what it meant to be an entrepreneur, what it meant to work at that scale and deal with banks and growth and people issues and all the things you would do in a small company, in a small business. That business was later sold, and I had an opportunity to go work with EDS. We were Electronic Data Systems, Ross Perot's old company, probably people are most familiar with it. And that was a great experience. That was kind of a different experience. Obviously, that was a big company experience, and had the opportunity to do a number of things through EDS, from selling traditional IT outsourcing deals. We used to call them in the old days facility management deals or outsourcing deals, to just systems integration projects. Had the opportunity to run software companies, even be involved in some M&A transactions, and just to work overseas, and just a variety of really, really, really great experiences. I was later recruited to go work at Koch Industry. And as many people know, it's either the first or second largest private company in America, owned by Charles Koch and family. And through a series of opportunities there, I ended up actually becoming the president of the venture capital practice, which was a great experience. Had the opportunity to learn from Charles really at his feet, probably, you know, one of the greatest entrepreneurs in the world, in my opinion, one of the most brilliant guys I've ever met. And had the opportunity to learn from him. And it was like an MBA times 100, going in and talking to him and learning about his approach to investing and creating value and the market-based principles and discipline that Koch applied. Really was life-changing in some ways, and things that I even apply today to our business. And then that led to the opportunity where I really wanted to stay in Dallas, that we were sort of retrenching some things back to Wichita, and I wanted to stay in Dallas and decided to kind of cut my own path. And that led to me starting a really exciting company called iDonate. And we provide fundraising services, well, fundraising platform, software services to charities, ministries, churches, nonprofits. And we have over 1,500 nonprofits today, and it's really been a great experience to grow that company from scratch. And as they say, do good while doing well.
I'd like to ask this question of every guest that comes on, knowing what you know now, looking back over your career, what advice would you give yourself at the age of 22 if you're able to spin back time?
Well, I would think similar advice to what I would give my 22-year-old today and a 25-year-old daughter today, and I have three children, but it's similar, and I see this with them and with their friends, is there's a tremendous amount of anxiety about just getting started. In other words, the perfect job. There's a lot of angst and grinding on, well, is this the perfect thing to do? And what the best advice that I would give is, if I look back over my career and all the different experiences that I had, not just the places that I work, but the experience I had, you know, you can't connect the dots when you're 22-year-old. But when you look back now as a 58-year-old person looking back, you can kind of connect the dots and understand that all your experiences build on each other. And so what I say to people 22, and I probably tell myself, is, yes, I think ultimately we want to find a job that we love, because when you do that, you're not working. you know, ultimately that's our goal.
Sure.
But just get started. Just jump in. It's not the end of the world if you're going. It's not like decades ago where we picked a job and worked there. As you know, you're in this business, but no better than anybody. And you work there for decades and decades and decades, and you retire with a gold watch. It's a very fluid society. It's skills based. And so jump in and get some skills and just get going. I think the other thing related to this is some of these apprenticeship concepts are really taking off. You know, I'm in the tech business, and I don't really care where you went to school or what you have. If you can do project management or you can write good user stories, you're of value. And you don't have to go to 4 or 6 years of school to do that. You could start with an apprenticeship and just create skills and get going. But I'd say the main thing is quit standing on the sideline waiting for the perfect thing. Just jump in and start going. The dots will connect.
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. Any advice that you received that you wish you would have ignored?
Yeah, I think just the focus on, you know, the pursuit of the compensation or the financial sort of things that go along with it. I don't know if it was advice, but it was more of sort of an attitude or a culture that we're sort of all lined up to just simply put points on the board. Mm. And I think those are super important, but you know, if you're creating value, those things tend to take care of themselves. And I think sometimes you can kind of get that backwards. And I think I probably would have done that differently.
So think back to that first team that you were tapped on the shoulder to lead. What do you wish you would have known earlier about leadership and managing a team?
I think I probably discounted some of the tools today, like cultural index and predictive index. You know, there's 4 or 5 of them and people use them and they're all good. I think understanding, you know, where somebody is on those kinds of things helps you to understand how you're going to operate together. It's not going to make a decision necessarily about whether you hire somebody or not, but it's certainly going to help you understand how sort of the pieces fit together. I think the biggest thing though, and this is something that I learned at Koch Industries and they were world-class at, is I just think you need to grind for a long time beforehand about really making sure you understand how the team's going to complement each other and what you're looking for, and don't compromise on talent and values. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have the most talented athlete in the world, but if they don't have the right value system, it really doesn't matter. You can have somebody who has a great value system and is not talented. And so you have to have both. And just, I think early on in my career, I underestimated how important it was to spend a lot of time on just thinking through the recruitment process and getting that right. Because one of the takeaways I learned at Koch is, there's an exponential difference between a B+ and an A+. I mean, it's not incremental, it's exponential. And taking the time to find that A+ can literally change your company. And then you're in that business. And again, you know that better than anybody, but just taking that a lot more seriously and spending more time on it, other than just saying, here's a resume and this person has great talents and let's get them on the team. It has to be a functional team.
So besides when you're looking at and evaluating people, you look at their values, you look at, you know, their abilities or their talents or their capabilities, anything else that you're looking for as you're putting together teams?
Well, I mean, we clearly want to look at their experience to see if it's relevant. You know, there's just get at the tactical level. You know, when you're doing a startup like we did at iDonate, it's great to have big company experience, but a lot of times people get into that and the first question they start asking when they get on board is, where are all my people, my team, and my resources? And I look at them and go, well, I'm looking at them.
Right, you know? Right.
So there, it's where they understand that paradigm of the, you know, what it means to actually be in a startup in a small company or not. And you know, there's a time and place. I think there's stages of companies where you want to have different capabilities and making sure you don't get out of whack from a stage standpoint. I think the last point I'd add really quickly, and again, I'll give Mr. Koch credit to this, he was better than anybody at this, was really emphasizing the importance of intellectual honesty from a value standpoint. You know, there's folks around there at Koch that are running multi-billion-dollar businesses with degrees from agriculture at small state schools because they really practiced this value of intellectual honesty. And so the leadership was always confident that if there was ever a problem, they would bring it to them, and they wouldn't wait until the project was over budget and the plant blew up. They would bring it to them right up front, because they would just admit, I'm over my skis. I need help. And you can deal with that. You just can't deal with the person that says, that doesn't tell you and waits until it blows up.
Sure. So we talked a little bit before we got started about the importance of developing a thesis and kind of having that discipline. Talk a little bit about what you mean by that and kind of how you've applied it through your career.
We've been pretty disciplined, whether on the investment side. I had the opportunity to be on the investment side from a principal side and still am from time to time. But even when building out a capability in a business, you know, it's there's a lot of shiny objects when you're building the business. You know, you see this over here and this over here and this over there. And of course, we'll talk about it probably in a minute about focus. But before you pursue anything, I just think it's really important to have a thesis. Is why, even at the level of why are we going to go build a partnership with this company? You know, everybody wants to have partnerships, or why are we going to build this capability that we don't have in the business? Are we going to launch into the services business or not as a software company? Well, if we are, what's our thesis? What do we hope to achieve by that? What are we going to measure in 6 months? Did we achieve the thesis or not? If we didn't, stop doing it. If we did, invest more. What's the next thesis until you build it out? And I think that it's easy just to get caught up chasing shiny objects and poor. It's not just money, but the opportunity cost is what kills you in a company. You only have so much of your team and yourself and your resources to spread around.
So this last year has been an incredible year. Nobody's ever experienced anything like that that's living today. But what have you done to keep, it's hard enough keeping focus during normal times, but this last year has definitely, I think, stretched everybody. But what lessons have you learned about that this past year?
Well, looking back, I think in some ways there's places where I could have done a better job. But I remember early on when this started to break back in February or March, and when things were truly getting unsettling, there's one thing I did that I think went over very well and people have responded positively is I would write a letter to the company every week. And I would basically sort of, recap the week, sort of try to encourage them, try to inspire them, and try to have that, sort of a week in the life of I Donate as just a way to sort of connect on a human and personal level about what's going on. Mm-hmm. And, we do all the things everybody else does, which is to try to have team time and chats and virtual lunches and coffees and things like that. But I mean, to be honest with you, it's been challenging. Now there's two sides of this. That's the internal side. That's the team, which is super important, but it's also, you have the customer side. And so you're not able to go out and shake a hand, meet somebody, sit across from them, take them to dinner, take them to lunch, look them eye to eye. And I was talking to a friend the other day and he said his net promoter scores actually went down, even though, and he didn't necessarily have any bad scores. He just didn't have the 8, 9s, and 10s. And he felt like that was because he wasn't out pressing flesh.
Sure.
And meeting people. But I think we've all been challenged by that. I think the bigger challenge is going to be everybody trying to figure out how to transition back to the new normal and bring everybody that used to be at home and their shorts and flip flops and getting them back into the office. I think that's going to be as equally a big of a cultural challenge.
So around culture, I think there's been a lot written about, there's the statement, culture eats strategy. Talk a little bit about that as you've grown a company from, kind of the beginnings and as you're growing the organization. How do you keep that culture healthy? And talk a little bit about your thoughts around that.
Well, one of the things that we've done is we've tried to tie it to a simple idea. And so what's neat about our business is, and I Donate, we provide a software platform that helps organizations that are at charities, causes, or whatever, raise funds. And so what we try to do, and the purpose of them raising money is obviously to fulfill their mission or drive impact into whatever it is they're doing, whether it's for water or adoption or spreading the gospel or whatever the mission of the organization is. And so one of the things that we've done from a cultural standpoint is we've really always tried to get the organization aligned and focused on the impact. And so the idea is, if you're working here, yeah, you're in the tech business and yeah, you're coming to a job, but the better product to make, the better service you provide, everything that you're doing is tied directly to the impact. So if we build world-class products and deliver world-class service, we're not just selling or technology or peddling something, we're actually driving impact dollars on the other end. And so we've also tried to get customers to come talk about their impact and try to really get the employees to connect. Yeah, I have a job, but if I do that job well, I'm creating more impact dollars, if you will. Mm. And so there's a neat causation that we try to really instill in our company and build a culture around that.
Yeah, that's great. And I think the next generation is definitely tied in, at least the people that I'm talking to that are kind of that next, and a lot of the listeners to this podcast are that next generation leader. And I think that is something that energizes them, and they want to feel like they're part of something that is making a difference for sure. As a leader, I think it's important that we continue to grow, no matter what stage you're at. But any books that you've read that you would recommend to other leaders?
Yeah, I mean, if I was ranking the top three, the first one I have to say the Bible. I mean, it's important to me, and it's a book that I read on a regular basis, and I'll try to get the wisdom from that. I don't think anybody can have a business without having good to great on their shelf. You know, there's so much basic and fundamental stuff that Collins talks about, and the flywheel principle. We even still talk about that. We talked about that in the last couple of weeks, you know, as a matter of fact, we even have this cadence quarterly where everybody kind of puts their five pushes down and we kind of go through the quarter and talk about, are we getting those done or not? And you add those up and it's like, well, we have 400 or 500 pushes over a year. Will that get the flywheel going? So we even still to this day talk about some of those concepts, you know. And I love biographies and I love reading about leaders, and you know, it's probably overused and over talked about, but I do love the book on Jobs that was written, the original one. And I can't remember the author, the Wall Street Journal author, but there's just kind of three things that I think that I continue to take away from that book and sort of his life. And you know, one of them is just this idea of focus. You know, he's famous, and there's quotes in the book about, you know, how many things do you say no to? And just this relentless and maniacal focus that he had. And so I take that away. The second thing is just the tension. It's interesting, the tension he had from being sort of relentless about quality and the passion that he had, and sort of the value system and the culture, because, you know, you can take that too far to where, you know, you break everybody and run everybody off, but you can appreciate and respect his fanaticism about the passion for the products. And then the last one kind of relates to something we talk a lot about iDonate. We talk a lot about this idea of connected giving, where we want to move donors from simply doing a single transaction into a long-term relationship. And that's what we do with our products. And that requires this commitment to brand consistency, to build trust with organizations. And I've always just admired how Jobs and even Apple, the culture that's been relentless to take, you know, there's a note in the book about not the brand is all the way from the top of the organization, all the way into the product, even the places of the product that you can't even see, that you'd have to open up and see that the quality is actually under the hood that you would never even see. And just that culture that he instilled from, it was interesting, that culture of passion and quality from the top down all the way into the bowels of a product is really kind of inspiring and motivating.
So you've worked around technology. You've run a software as a service company for the last number of years. So are you a digital guy or are you an analog person when it comes to technology? I've seen a lot of people that are really techie, but they've gone back to kind of more analog in some of the things that they do.
I'm trying to do the exact same thing. I'm now training myself to use my digital pen here with a note-taking app on my iPad. I've actually I use the same tools everybody else does, but I've actually tried to embrace the iPad more as my PC. I love the idea of carrying it everywhere and I love to take notes because that's just how I remember things and I study and learn. And so now I'm trying to make and I'm a very, very fast typer and I enjoy that, but I'm trying to make the transition to using the pen to write notes so it's not obnoxious in a meeting and,
sure.
and kind of blend that old style note-taking in a meeting and stuff with my iPad. But I think I'm starting to crack the code on actually making that my primary tool.
Okay. So if you had only two apps that you could use, what would those two apps be?
Probably GoodNotes for note-taking. Mm-hmm. I would say I love GoodNotes. And I don't know. I'm embarrassed to say, but I don't think I can live without Excel. Okay. It's how I formulate thoughts.
Okay. So outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
Anything on the water. The water calms me, inspires me, and relaxes me. And so we do about anything you can do on the water and around boating or wakeboarding or sailing or anything like that. So I just love the water.
So do you barefoot ski or do you?
I don't barefoot ski yet. Okay. I never figured that out. You know, I wakeboard some and I've wake surfed a little bit, which is kind of cool. And that's what everybody's doing these days. But my wife and I still will pull out a slalom ski every now and then. And that feels like you're in the 60s.
Yeah. No, I know my kids, it's kind of like skiing today. It's like my kids all snowboard and I love snow skiing.
I'll do that every year. I still love to snow ski. I haven't pulled a snowboard out, but I still love to snow ski.
Yeah, we were talking about that we're getting almost 70 degrees in Minnesota, and you're used to that, but we sent some winter your direction a few weeks ago, so sorry about that.
It was
So what parting advice would you give to a new upcoming leader?
I think the future is going to be a lot about values, you know, with what's going on in our country and just society and the polarization that's going on. And you know, it's unfortunate, but it's there's this sort of tribalism on the left and on the right versus coming at it and solving problems from a principle standpoint. Mm-hmm. And so I think that if leaders are going to have to really understand and embrace who they are, regardless of what their worldview or their value system, you talked about this younger generation earlier, you know, they look for authenticity. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whatever your values are, hold to them and be authentic and try to come at it from the standpoint of solving problems through principles, not through joining a tribe. Mm.
Good advice. Oh, it's been a lot of fun talking today and definitely appreciate your thoughts. It's I know it's going to be helpful for those that that listen and wish you continued success with iDonate. How would somebody learn more about what you're doing in your organization?
Go to iDonate.com. We'd love to talk to you about how we could serve you.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.